All right, Memphis. You're listening to WYXR 91.7 FM. And my name is Liv Cohen, but more importantly, I've got Jason Isbell sitting right next to me.
Hello. That's not more importantly. That's not. Your name is extremely important.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'm here. I'm happy to be here. Everybody out there looks great. Hey, everybody. You all look great.
And Jason, I just wanted to say, I'm currently having the best birthday ever.
Are you? Is it today your birthday?
Today is my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much for being here. Just wanted to go ahead and dive right in. You want to kick off one of your songs?
Yeah, I'll do a song. Let's see. I think I can sing this one. It's kind of early for my voice, but we'll try.
Take a copper from the work side, meet me there at midnight. They ain't got a camera or a guard. Write my own prescription if I can't get a fix on. It's about to get real hard. Molly's gonna leave me, says she don't believe me. The kids won't even know my name. Put a gallon in the step side, and with a little help by morning, I won't feel no pain. Up this far behind, just a couple years back we had it made. I was emptying my bladder on a 20-foot ladder. Should have climbed down and found myself some shade. The doctor took a quick look and I got out the checkbook and left with a pocket full of pills. Now my back's still hurting and I'm too weak for working, and I can't keep up with all the bills. She used to wake me up with coffee every morning, and I'd hear her homemade house shoes slide across the floor. And she used to make me feel like the king of Oklahoma, but nothing makes me feel like much of nothing anymore. I was all set up to do it, but some bastard beat me to it. Ain't a copper pipe left on the line. Got a loan out on the truck, but I'm running out of luck, and the title is the only thing I've got. Molly's gonna leave me, says she don't believe me, but I got nothing left to lie about. She's going back to Bixby, tired of trying to fix me. Says I got some things to figure out. She used to wake me up with coffee every morning, and I'd hear her homemade house shoes slide across the floor. She used to make me feel like the king of Oklahoma, but nothing makes me feel like nothing anymore. And she used to wake me up with coffee every morning, and I'd act like I would sleep until she walked back through the door. She used to make me feel like the king of Oklahoma, but nothing makes me feel like nothing anymore.
Thank you. Thank you. They're clapping outside the window. I can see it. I can't hear it, but I can see it. It's kind of like the morning after a show when I can see people doing things, but I can't hear them. I just have to pretend like I can hear them or else my wife will make me get a hearing aid, which I don't want.
Not yet.
I'm not ready for that yet.
Cool. Well, welcome to Memphis.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
I'm very happy to be in Memphis. On the drive over, I was showing my tour managers all of my old haunts. I showed them where CK's used to be and told them about the little beer mugs full of maple syrup. It was the greatest place on earth.
Yeah. So what were some of your go-tos while you were here during your U of M days?
I drove around a lot. I went to CK's, of course, and I went to 616. You know, I'm not going to tell anybody why we would go there when we were not yet 21. but like Wednesday night, I think you could drink for like a quarter. Was it a quarter of beer on Wednesday night, I think? And it was like very watery, you know, but that was for the best for sure. I don't know. I would go to the Oak Court Mall for lunch. I remember that. Like, that's as far as I could get and still get back in time for class. So I would just drive there and I would eat lunch in the food court and then I would go back to class. And then El Porton, is that still there? That's still there. That one time we were having lunch there and one of my buddies was drinking and at lunch, can you believe that? And we got in the car to leave, and I was like, "You shouldn't be doing this." And he floored it like right there in the parking lot and ran over the curb. And we thought, you know, that everything was fine. Like, we stopped and we're like, "I think everything's fine." But he'd had a spare tire sitting in the bed of his truck, and so when he hit the curb, the spare tire came out of the bed of the truck and landed like on its side.
Oh, man.
You know, and rolled through the patio and took out all of the patio tables of everybody sitting there eating lunch, and we just watched it happen in the rearview mirror. It was amazing. it was terrible. It was terrible. Don't do any of that ever.
Cool. So how does it feel to be back in Memphis today?
It's great. It's nice. I enjoy Memphis. I think Memphis has a lot of culture, and I have a lot of friends here, a lot of people that I care a lot about, and I like the music venues. I like the park. You know, it's pretty over there. It's going to be a nice outdoor show. It's not terribly hot for Memphis today, which is extra nice. I'm really happy. Really happy to be here.
Yeah, for sure. I also have a follow-up question for Memphis.
Okay.
How would you say Memphis has influenced your own personal sound?
Oh, you know, the first songs that I ever wrote for people to hear, you know, when I wasn't just writing them for myself, I wrote them here in Memphis, you know, and I was really trying to, I was waiting tables in Germantown, as one does, you know, yeah, at the, there were like three restaurants. One of them was a Friday's. And then there was I think I was at an O'Charlie's next door. It was like right across from the church, you know, Six Flags Over Jesus. It was like right across from there. I was waiting tables. And there was one of the guys that worked there with me that was like, "I've got a gig this weekend if you want to come open for me." And I was like, "Yeah, of course, I'll come open for you." And he said, "But you have to have all your own songs." And I was like, "Yes, no problem. I got plenty of songs." I had no songs. So I stayed up all night the night before and wrote 30 minutes worth of material. And then went and opened for him at the Map Room downtown, which is, I guess, a shoe store now, I think. And the ceiling's still the same, though. They still got the maps on the ceiling in there. I went. Last time we were in town, I stopped in there and bought a pair of shoes. But that was the first place I ever played any of my songs for people to hear. And it went really well. When I got home, you know, those were the songs that got attention of the studios and Muscle Shoals and all that. But that was all just from staying up all night and writing 30 minutes worth of songs so I could play my original music at the Map Room. Yeah, that was probably 97, 98.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, you just played King of Oklahoma.
Yep.
Off of your new album, Weather Vanes. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Can you talk a little bit about your experience? This is your first self-produced album.
Well, sort of, yeah.
Not with Dave Cobb producing it.
Right. Before that, I used to do it, before we started working with Dave. But it had been about a decade since I'd done that, just because you know, when I started working with Dave, I was doing a lot of things to try to turn over some of the control of my work and some of my life, and I'd gotten sober, and I thought, man, a lot of this is like the myth of controlling everything. So I'm just going to do my homework, give it to somebody else, let them tell me what to do in the studio. And that worked really, really well, and still would if we did it again. But I just got to a point now where I thought, I think I can do this without messing it up. You know, I think mm-hmm. I can go in and serve the songs without feeling like I have something to prove. Because that's a hard thing in a studio. If you're calling yourself a producer, sometimes you're like, I need to do some producer stuff, you know. And I finally got to the point where I was kind of over that and just could go in and do the work and not worry about, you know, any sort of external motivations.
Mm-hmm. How would you say you grew in your craft during that experience?
You know, in all kinds of ways. Really, the ultimate thing that improves or should improve over time is just your taste, you know, because once you learn how to play an instrument, how to write a song, then you rely on when it's done. And that's the job of a songwriter or a producer or guitar player, anybody else, is like, I have to know when this is done, because after that point, you know, you're ruining it. You're doing too much. You're tweaking it until it's broken. But you're constantly refining that place. When is this song finished? When is this recording finished? When is this album finished? And I think I got better at that. You know, I'm happy with the finished product, so I think I got better at it.
All right. Awesome. Thanks. Well, you want to dive into another song?
Yeah, let's do another song.
All right.
Let's see. Don't wash the cast iron skillet. Don't drink and drive, you spill it. Don't ask too many questions or you'll never get to sleep. There's a hole inside you, fill it. Shower up and shave, put flowers on grave and ask the Lord to save his soul, although you know that it's too late. Was it 27 times or was it 29? I heard the blade broke off inside the man and he took a while to die. How did you get so low? It seems like just a week ago we were 10 and 12 years old. He was sweet and soft. He shied away from me inside fastballs and died doing life without parole. Don't wash the cast iron skillet. That dog bites my kid, I'll kill it. Don't walk where you can't see your feet. Don't ask questions, just believe it. Jamie found a boyfriend with smiling eyes and dark skin, and her daddy never spoke another word to her again. You'd see him at the quick stop, lying to the county cops and laughing like his soul was without sin. How did you get so low? Seems like just a week ago she was sitting on your shoulders watching fireworks in the sky. You treats her like a queen, but you don't know cause you ain't seen. It's hard to go through life without your daddy by your side. Don't wash the cast iron skillet. This town won't get no better. She found love and it was simple as a weather vane, but her own family tried to kill her. Don't wash the cast iron skillet. Don't wash the cast iron skillet. Don't wash the cast iron. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. I feel like something out there is telling me to eat, shop, and thrive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the motto
I'm
here.
I'm getting no context. I'm just receiving a transmission from another world that says eat, shop, and thrive. Little do they know I'm already doing those things as much as I can.
Awesome. Well, that was Cast Iron Skillet. Wonderful song, Jason.
Thank you very much. It's sad. It's daytime, so you know. But I don't really have a lot of like happy joy songs. I could do happy, happy, joy, joy. Yeah.
Cool. So I wanted to talk a bit about your role as celebrity, as
oh,
you
no.
will.
I don't have a role as celebrity.
No. More so, a lot of your fans know that you utilize your music, your lyrics, and your platform in general for political causes and addressing social justice issues.
Mm-hmm.
And also that kind of typically doesn't really align with what people may think of country and Americana music.
Right.
So I was just curious how you navigate this responsibility as your role as a musician in the country world and just as... Yeah.
That's a good question. Yeah, I ignore most of the naysayers, I think. And that's an easier thing for me to do because, you know, I'm a big white dude and so people aren't going to really come up to me and stop me on the street. You know, and that doesn't happen. I like everybody that has an issue with me, that if they're willing to say it out loud, it's usually on the internet. And, you know, knock on wood, it's not really happening in the real world, probably because I'm a big white dude. But I just, the things that I believe, like I'm very happy in the life that I have. I love my work. I love my family. I love my friends. I love my band and my crew. And I get to do the thing that I want to do. And so for me, going to sleep at night and enjoying all those things and not feeling like I have been given too much, it means that if I believe something, I have to say it out loud. And that way I can think, okay, at least I spoke my piece today and I can go to sleep at night and enjoy having, you know, fun guitars and stuff like that, you know. And I don't see it so much as a political issue. I think nowadays we confuse personal beliefs with political issues a lot. I think that's part of the problem. Some things, yeah, if you want to argue about politics, about how we exchange power, I mean, that's something we can argue about. But arguing about people's fundamental rights to me is not a political argument. And when somebody tries to make it a political argument, they're trying to weaken it and trying to make you not care as much about it. And so I refuse to fall for that. I think we're all granted certain things just by, you know, the fact that we're human and also by the fact that we're American, you know. And so I think that for me to enjoy my life, I have to say these things out loud or I would just be miserable, you know. And I'm not going to be miserable. I'm not doing it. I refuse.
Yeah. More power to you.
Thanks.
So would you say you're pretty intentional about this, or does it just come naturally?
Sometimes I'm intentional. But one good thing about like commenting on things on the internet or whatever, if you have a solid foundation, if you know what you believe, and you've come to those beliefs in ways that you can back up and you can defend those things, then that kind of like there's this baseline that you're not really going to screw up too bad because it's always right there. If you're going by it and living by it and thinking about it and you know, questioning yourself regularly and being self-aware, then you can pretty much just go off the cuff and not have to worry about saying something that is disastrously wrong. So no, I'm not terribly... Like I don't premeditate those things. I would say that I try to do it with awareness, I try to be intentional. But I don't you know plan that kind of stuff. If I get mad, I'll say something. You know,
yeah.
And I like to do it while I'm angry, because later on
it's
when
the
I
best
calm
time
down,
to do it.
Yes, it is. It's important for us all to have our feelings. I have an 8-year-old, and you know, she. When I was a kid, everybody was like, "Don't cry, stop crying," you know, and that's not the right thing to do. Sometimes you need to be mad, you need to be upset, and yeah, sometimes you have to go in the laundry room and do it because everybody else is eating dinner. You can't sit there and be upset with everybody else, but. But it's good to have your feelings, because if not, they're going to come out as something different later on down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned your daughter and your family. So I was curious, how do Amanda and Mercy play a role in your music?
Oh, I mean, they're just the biggest part of my life, you know. So anytime I'm documenting my life, which is what I try to do with these songs, you know, they're going to be in there. Also, Amanda's a really brilliant writer and helps me out a lot if I get stuck on something, or if I finish a song, I'll take it to her and say, is this done, you know, and she'll say yes or no, and if she says yes, then we celebrate and yeah, have some cake or something, and if she says no, then I get mad and stomp around and then I go fix it, you know. But yeah, it's you know, she does the same thing that I do for work, and so our daughter is surrounded by that kind of stuff, for better and for worse, and we really enjoy each other's company, you know, and we like working together, and I would have completely different stories to tell without my family being around me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you think being a husband and being a father has influenced you as a person and in your music and in your profession?
That's a good question. I mean, it's kind of like, it doesn't change who you are to have a child, but it does motivate you to be more vocal about it sometimes, you know, because you look around and you see, like, oh, everybody was somebody's kid at one point, you know, and that kind of gives you a different perspective on adults, you know. Somebody loved this person. Can you imagine? You know, somebody took care of this person. You know, it might motivate you to work a little harder and to be a little more vocal and to care a little bit more about things, you know. But if you start out as a bad dude, you're going to have a kid, you're going to be a bad dad, you know. You got to get all that sorted. Luckily, my daughter didn't come along until I've been sober for quite a few years and making pretty good decisions. And so she doesn't have to know that guy, which makes me pretty happy.
Yeah, well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
You want to do one last song?
Let's do one last song. This one, so this year, I saw Charles Hughes out there. Charles is a fantastic writer and teacher, and Charles wrote liner notes for a re-release of the album Southeastern that originally came out a decade ago this summer. It was the first one on air. Southeastern Records label that we did ourselves, and it was a big record for us, a big deal for us, and changed a lot of things for the better. So I'll do a song off of that album, I think. Staring at the pictures of the runaways on the wall. It seems like these days you couldn't run away at all. Even if you did, what you got to run away to? Just another drunk daddy with a white man's point of view. I can see you in my mind's eye catching light. We'll sleep beside the river if we make it out of town tonight. You can strip in Portland on the day you turn 16. You got one thing to sell in benzodiazepine. 10 years ago I might have seen you dancing in a different light. Offered up my help in a different way. But those were different days. Those were different days. I had a girl back home and we shared her single bed. When I whispered in her ear, she believed every word I said. If she didn't believe, she didn't dare give me slack. Or it was, baby, I love you, but you gotta get off my. And time went by and I left again. Guess Jesus loves the sinner, but the highway loves the sin. My daddy told me, I believe he told me the truth.
that the right thing's always the hardest thing to do. 10 years ago I might have stuck around for another night, used her in 1,000 different ways. Those were different days. Those were different days. And the story's only mine to live and die with, and the answer's only mine to come across. But the ghost that I got scared and I got high with, it looked a little lost. 10 years ago I might have thought I didn't have the right to say these things an outlaw wouldn't say, but those were different days. Those were different days. Those were different days.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's funny because I say 10 years ago in that song, and that's been 10 years ago now. So, it is
mind-blowing.
It is.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Jason.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be in Memphis and happy to talk with you today.
Yes. It was great having you here, and thank you to everyone who showed up outside.
Thanks, you guys. Is that Jeremy? Jeremy? I see Jeremy. I went to high school with that guy in Alabama. That's cool. I see a bunch of people out there that I know, a bunch of people I don't know, but they all look good. They all look like friends.
That's Memphis for you.
There's a Todd Snyder shirt I see. I saw Todd open for Willie Nelson on campus in the 90s at University of Memphis.
Wow.
It was just Todd and his dog up there opening for Willie Nelson. And my friend JR had a Kurt Vonnegut book that he got Willie Nelson to sign, which I thought was just amazing. It was a good day. We had a good day. Actually, that was the first time I heard Todd Snyder. And I was like, what is this guy? I don't even understand what kind of music this is. And I've been a fan ever since. I love Todd. I love Todd.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you a million times. You're free.
I'm free. I'm going to go wish there was still a CK's to have some maple syrup at.
Well, yeah. You know, I got the sign and it's in my backyard and they were tearing it down.
Really? See, I couldn't do it. If I had the sign in my yard, I'd get up every morning and I would get so hungry, I would be so mad. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
All right. This is WXR. Thank you, Jason Isbell, for hanging out with us. This is 91.7 FM, Memphis.